medical-grade titanium has been used in dental implants since the 1960s. But could there be hidden side effects causing serious problems for patients today?
If you're just placing implants willy-nilly, or the implants weren't stored properly, then, you know, the failure rate might be greater than that.
Today, I'm joined by oral surgeon Dr. Patel to help uncover the truth about the safety of titanium dental implants and what that could mean for your health. We also know that cost is a big concern when it comes to dental implants, so we've created a cost guide that you can download in the description below to find out what you can expect. So let's jump right in. Can you describe for us what titanium even is and how it's used for dental implants? How does it help restore a smile?
Well, titanium is a biocompatible metal that's used throughout the medical industry. It's been used for, well over the past 40 years. But we use titanium all over the face. Now, in the dental, at least with how it pertains to Nuvia, if there were no teeth here, we'd basically put kind of 4 to 6 implants in the bottom and the top jaw. And these would basically anchor the full prosthetic. So it's kind of like small-scale carpentry that we're doing here.
So knowing that, you know, titanium is the material used in about over 90% of dental implants, why do you use it as a provider over maybe other materials like ceramic, for example?
Ceramic implants are good in certain cases. If you're really thinking about a front tooth or something like that, then a ceramic implant is great because you can match the color a little more readily. But titanium is just as strong as ceramic in most cases. But ceramic implants are very, very, very expensive. If you're thinking about a ceramic implant, you should consider that, most of the implant is in the bone anyway, so it really doesn't matter what color it is. So if you're just replacing one front tooth, a ceramic implant's great. But for, you know, an all-on-4 prosthetic or all-on-X prosthetic like Nuvia provides, ceramic implants are useless. Titanium is going to be superior in almost every case just because of size availability, ability of ability of your body to actually integrate the implant. Titanium works very well.
And what is the success rate of titanium dental implants?
It's over 98%, and this is in hundreds, thousands, millions of cases. Of course, that is provider dependent. So if you're just placing implants willy-nilly, or the implants weren't stored properly, or sterile technique isn't being used, then, you know, the failure rate might be greater than that. But at least according to my logs in the past 2 years, I have maybe a couple cases in over 2,000 implants that I've placed. So really the percentage is very small. It's probably 99.5%. I actually want to go through these logs now.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So, you know, with this high success rate and it being the most commonly used material for dental implants, why do you think there is some sort of concern of, you know, a safety?
People might have this concern about amalgam and they go, well, you know, in dental amalgam and previous fillings, there's mercury. And yeah, you shouldn't expose anyone to mercury in amalgam. We don't do amalgam fillings anymore, really. It certainly isn't going to result in mercury poisoning. That's just from dental fillings. Now, titanium is used in, it's so widely used in the medical industry for hip replacements, shoulder replacements, reconstruction plates that you might see in trauma, all over the body for reconstructive purposes. It does not leak. It's not a substance that will poison you unless you're literally injecting, I would think, like nanoparticles of it into your bloodstream. This is not what's happening with a dental implant. These dental implants are finished in a way that it's virtually impossible unless you're really trying to. It's impossible to fracture them. And on top of that, it's it's impossible for it to leak into the bloodstream or be unhealthy to someone. Now, as for a secondary concern where just putting it in your body, I understand the concern about like, well, it's a foreign body that's being embedded in my bone. I do understand that concern. But since probably the advent of war and forging metals, there's been countless skeletons that have been found with various, from all the way from ancient ages, all the way back to the Egyptians, to the medieval ages, through civil war times when really jaw surgery was, there's a large amount of jaw surgery taking place during the Civil War, as you can imagine, like just facial injuries and stuff. So there's countless cases of through the millennia of different civilizations experimenting with internal fixation and various metals that are good or bad for that. Gold really is, it's a decent metal for molding, but it doesn't have great, has awesome pliability, but it doesn't maintain its rigidity. It's very biocompatible as well. Titanium in thickness has awesome biocompatibility and awesome rigidity. So it's really, decades and decades and hundreds of years that kind of brought us to a moment where we finally, you can look at all the cases of foreign bodies being embedded in bone or in someone's skeleton, and your body doesn't launch a reaction to this most of the time, unless this foreign body is moving, wiggling, and constantly has forces on it, somehow mobilizing it. There is not an inflammatory reaction to the body. We often, in trauma surgery, leave foreign bodies in the body unless it's posing a huge risk or causing an infection, like bullets and, nothing says despite what TV shows say, nothing says you have to take a bullet out of the body. So anyway, to make a long story short, the act of putting titanium into the human skeleton is very tried and tested. It has been since the 1970s, and it's very successful, especially in the right practitioner's hands.
Can you explain biocompatibility in maybe simpler terms as well, just what that kind of means?
Biocompatibility just means, like, can your body maintain homeostasis or maintain its normal processes without some sort of inflammation, inflammatory process getting started? That's really what biocompatibility is. We're looking like, does the body tolerate this material without it altering your life in a negative way? In a nutshell.
How long, are they supposed to last? What's the kind of longevity look like?
Well, again, it depends on the practitioner. If you get it done well and you're not, cracking open beer bottles on, say, a new prosthetic you would get from Nuvia, they'll last forever. Since ancient times, there's been countless skeletons found and bodies unearthed that have, foreign bodies embedded in their skeleton. There's been jaw fractures that were fixed in Civil War times where you can still find the skeleton with, like, wires. Wow. That had fixated somebody's jaw. They stay there forever. Theoretically, these things should last for life if they're taken care of the right way and they're placed the right way.
So how does, you work for Nuvia, how do you and others there make sure they're placed, well? What does that mean necessarily?
That's a long process. That's a very in-depth question too. And it's not just something local to Nuvia. After college, I went through 4 years of dental school, which included medical training, and then a 4 to 6 year residency program in a major hospital system. For me, it was MedStar Washington Hospital Center, Johns Hopkins, Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., as well as the National Institute of Health. Throughout all this experience, you kind of learn how to reconstruct somebody's face, put Humpty Dumpty back together again, how to treat cancer, all these things. So when it comes to placing implants, it's a very specialized procedure. That's sort of the accumulation of a lot of years of training. So the immediate ways we make sure they're placed well are good communication with the whole team on what we're building here. So we make sure that we're designing the prosthetic appropriately. It's sort of, again, I'll go back to the carpentry analogy. We're building a house, and the final result is the house you see. The part I'm responsible for is, let's call it demolition and laying the foundation. So I make sure everything's clear and the stage is set, that there's a good platform, that all the implants are going to be in a level plane and can handle the vectors of force that are going to be translated into the jawbone. So I'm thinking of that whole thing, like what sort of house are we trying to build? Okay, with that in mind, what physical forces is it going to put on the jawbone? How should I angle these? How should I position these for good, both anterior posterior spread, lateral forces, and then kind of nuanced vectors of force that are put along all these things. In addition to that, there's just good sterile technique, making sure, you know, the mouth is a can be a very dirty place. And, you know, you can't isolate it very well against just the bacteria that's in there. So placing it with good technique and knowing when things are looking good, when they're not, to put things very simply, that also comes into play. So I would, you know, if someone is looking and trying to qualify different surgeons and how experienced they are, look at their training, how much, you know, trauma training they had, a reconstruction training, because they've seen very big cases probably go very well. And they've also had a fair share of cases go very poorly, and they know why that happened. And these sorts of procedures to me, while they now seem very simple for me, you know, I treat each one with just as much gravity and attention as, you know, some of those massive cases where we're, you know, saving somebody's life.
Right. Oh my goodness. And it sounds like too, you know, every patient, every person that comes in is going to be different, right? So Yeah.
There's a constant level of adaptability and, you know, intimate knowledge of anatomy and having done it hundreds of thousands of times. This is where the experience comes in. You don't really want somebody who just kind of does it a couple times a year. You know, you'd rather have the pilot that flies every day. You don't want the pilot who, you know, they're a weekend hobbyist. They might fly a plane once every couple months. Like, no. Get the guy who does it as his job and is very comfortable, even if, you know, he was doing it in a war zone.
Right. What I think that's really cool about Nuvia in particular is because that is all you guys do, right? Like day in and day out. Is there anything different that Nuvia does in the way they restore smiles?
I mean, in addition to getting to work right with the restorative doctors, the lab is literally working overnight. It's all the processes that are happening right in conjunction with each other. If you went to a normal oral surgery practice or a normal dentist and you ask for an all-on-4 procedure, they'll say yes, and you know they might, you know, sound great. But then when it gets into the details, you'll start finding that as a patient, you would get kicked all over the place. You would go to this guy's office to get the surgery. You then go see this guy at a different office to get the prosthetic. And then you might have to wait a couple days for the lab to do something else. And then, you know, the process is kind of, it's all over the place. Nobody's under the same roof. And at the very most, they're just calling each other on the phone and going, hey, you know, I'm sending this patient over to you. Surgery went fine. The details are sort of sporadic. If you're right next to the restorative provider now, and during surgery, you notice an issue, me myself, if I notice an issue, I can just call in the restorative doc, say, hey, you got to look out for X, Y, and Z. We're able to tailor the case, you know, spot on to the patient. I wouldn't be working at Nuvia if I didn't think it was a good process, because as a surgeon, I'm not in the business of taking risks. I get the very act of surgery is a risk, I don't need even an ounce more. So if I thought it was unsafe, or we didn't have good communication, or we were rushing things a little too quick, I would not be here.
Absolutely. I mean, that makes sense. can you briefly describe, you know, restorative doctor, like after you have basically laid that foundation, what do they play the role in the carpentry analogy?
Yeah, so they really build the rest of the house. Once the foundation is laid and, you know, these implants are in the bone and everything's nice and stable, I give them the green light to go ahead with the next part of the procedure. That process really just involves like kind of fitting some, you know, small parts and pieces to the implants I placed, registering their position, making sure that the lab is the one actually casting and firing the teeth. The restorative doc is the one making sure that what the lab delivers is what the patient wanted, what they ordered, the right shape, make sure that the physical forces are what we talked about. And so by that, I mean, if they ordered like a small arch of teeth to, you know, fit somebody petite and nicely, these are all things that need to be considered. Like, we got to make sure the tooth size is right. Make sure the midlines are matching up. Make sure the platform, there's going to be nuances. I can't exactly take a spirit level and make sure that everything is perfectly level, like to the T. There's little nuances between patients. So they'll have to adapt for a slight grating, or what we call a cant. They'll have to adapt for all these little nuances that, you know, I've relayed to them. So there's so many things that you wouldn't consider as a patient. You'd think like, oh, just put the teeth in. Like, no. It will look so wrong if it's even a millimeter off, like if it's sticking out or in or sideways or tilted or the wrong color, the shape, the curvature, the size of the arch. There's so many different things involved with this procedure. That's why it helps to just have, one center doing it all.
You talked about overnight they're working, right? So how come that speed is so important? Can you talk about, you know, the 24-hour process a little bit, that it is in 24 hours?
Yeah, it is in 24 hours. As far as the details go with that, this is more of a restorative question, I would say. They are able to deliver that result. I know this is not an easy process. Zirconia, sort of like ceramic implant, it's a type of zirconia. It's called tetragonal zirconia, and it's highly fracture resistant. It's a very, very durable material, and it's very tough to work with. It's not easy to just, you shape it or you drill it or something like that. No, it takes forever. Like, in order to drill something or alter it, it's a lot of work. It's like trying to cut diamond almost. So making sure you get it, this is the attitude I share with those around me as well. We like to make sure we get things right the first time. In healthcare and anything healthcare or medical related, that's going to be the fastest way. I think the Navy SEALs also have a quote where the quote goes something like, slow is steady and steady is fast. And that's exactly right. Like, if you're making sure things are done right the first time, you won't have to go back and redo this whole process. So even though they're getting it done in 24 hours, it's with every checkup in place between me and the restorative doc. They're engineering what we want. Yes, it's done in 24 hours. That's because they're literally working overnight. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible.
And last question I have is, you know, when it comes to the patients themselves, why do you think getting something done at this speed is important?
Well, for the very reason, it's important to the patient to get it done this quick, for the very fact that you don't want to be without teeth for very long. A lot of these patients come to us and they already do not have teeth or have not had teeth for a while. Going through a long process with this is also, it's not the most desirable thing. You don't want to do that. But in cases where a patient has some remaining teeth up front and you're thinking, oh, geez, I, I have to go to work in a couple weeks. Like, what would I do? I can't just be without teeth. And that's almost our number one rule. We're never letting anybody leave without teeth. If you go get it done at a private office or with a private doc, you have to keep in mind that what that one guy does may not encompass all the fees for what's going to happen at the next office and the next office. And then who's actually responsible for this? Are they going to maintain it for you? Are they going to, do you know where to go for support if something goes wrong? Whose problem is it? How many more fees happen? I used to do some of these cases in the private, sort of private practice world, and you're paying not only the oral surgeon when you go to his office, you're paying the general dentist or the prosthodontist, and then there may be an additional lab fee that you have to cover. It's a mess. When it's not all inclusive, you start to rack up a big bill.
Absolutely. I do have one last question, which is, do you have any advice for those who might be feeling like still skeptical about the process or even the price of dental implants?
Yeah, I would talk to anybody you know who has had this done. I know Nubia has a great Facebook group as well. So reading on that, the real experiences of previous patients, you know, certainly look me up and look the Tampa Nubia Center up. You could make a vacation out of it if you wanted to. Beautiful beaches. I would also recommend downloading the cost guide. It's on Nuvia's site. It'll give you a better estimate of the costs and everything that's involved. You like to make sure you have a good idea of the whole process and everything. And we're very transparent about the whole process here. It's very, very buttoned up. Again, I wouldn't be working for Nubia if I didn't believe in it.
If you found today's episode valuable, please consider giving us a rating or leaving us a review. It helps others discover the same information you did today.